Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very beautiful new episode of On Becoming. I'm so happy to have you here with me today. One of the unexpected discoveries that I've made as a career coach is the illusion of permanence. Often in our relentless pursuit of safety, security, and control, we forget what we crave more than anything in life, an exciting, dynamic, and adventurous experience. No crystal ball can predict or control the future. What I've discovered with my clients is that focusing on inner security, the sense of an inner home, is the key to navigating life's unpredictable twists with resilience and grace. To explore the tension between predictability and adventure, safety and exploration, I invited globe-trotting wellness entrepreneur Caroline Waschmuth to share how she broke free from the claustrophobic conformity of her Swiss upbringing to create a multi-passionate, multicultural, multi-continental life. With over two decades in the wellness space, wearing hats as an aromatherapist, a yoga teacher, massage therapist, Reiki practitioner, and athletic trainer, Caroline's story is a tapestry of experimentation and self-discovery. After starting her career as a journalist, her passion for botanicals and beauty led to the launch in 2002 of Dumi, the very first certified organic skincare line in France, which literally burst open the doors to a whole new dimension and conversation in beauty. Having lived and worked on three continents and in 15 cities, Caroline currently calls San Francisco, California, her home. More specifically, she calls her yoga mat in her apartment her home. A DIY beauty aficionado with thousands of self-tested recipes, she just launched the third edition of her book, Seasons, a captivating blend of art and recipes. And next year, she's publishing her first memoir. Join us today as Caroline guides us through a journey that transcends borders, disciplines, languages, and relationships, but that's all grounded in her daily practice of cultivating self-knowing and self-love. It's a conversation that promises to inspire and resonate with those of you seeking your own path to resilience and fulfillment. Enjoy. Do people call you Caroline or Caroline?
It depends. You know, it depends. I think Caroline in the Caroline. US for sure. Yeah. And then they ask, what shall I call you? You know, it's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between like Caroline and Caroline.
Yeah. It doesn't matter at all. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation. One of the main themes that I like to really emphasize with this podcast is how we're frequently very much on the track of thinking about what's coming next and who are we growing into. And there's so many little nuggets and treasures that are strewn along the path that has made us into who we are today. And sometimes also when we're looking for clues about what to do next or how to trust ourselves, journeying back can help us reignite parts of our identities that maybe we forgot about or at the time we weren't able to really process. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's just a subject that fascinates me, but it's also something that I'm curious about in my own stories. And that resonates with the stories that I hear with other women who have had very intriguing, atypical paths. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you are one of those people. And so is there anything going into this conversation that you feel like you are curious to shed some light on?
You know, I think where I come from, where you come from has a lot to do with how you're going to lead your life. I come from Switzerland, and I feel like this upbringing has been for me very difficult to break from. It's a very specific country, and I always felt very claustrophobic over there. There's an expression in French, we say, quand dira-t-on? You know that, right? Like
I don't know it.
You don't know quand dira-t-on? Okay, so there's, you know, being afraid of what people are going to think about you or are going to say about you. My upbringing was like this, like, you know, you need to be this, you need to do these studies, and you need to, you know, it's better if you have this kind of marriage and then this work. And so I didn't abide to this at all. And it was when people would ask me, okay, so what do you want to do when you grow up? And I, as a child, was answering, I want to live in a circus. I want to be an artist. I want to be a circus artist and travel. And my home is going to be those little trains outside that circus. So my family, they would be like, yeah, whatever, nonsense. You're just a child. You don't even know what you're talking about. And then it's interesting because I thought about lately, I had a conversation with a friend about this, about our lives and the choices we've made and why we did this. And it's incredible, you know, those kind of conversation you have with your girlfriends. And then I thought, my life is not really different from that. It's been a little bit of a circus. It's been a little bit of a circus and constant relocation. And I feel like I've been a little bit of also an aerialist, you know, like a trapeze artist, because things have been shaky, but also beautiful and very physical and airy.
It's interesting that we're talking about this, because one of the things I wanted to bring up early on in our conversation was your beautiful new book, Seasons.
Oh, thank you.
Which is absolutely gorgeous. The illustrations are incredible. And also what you write in the beginning and how you set the tone about what you want people to gain from experiencing the book. You begin the book with a poem that's called Home. Going back to the circus.
Yeah, the circus.
The circus and the different parts of the circus train as, I guess, meandering and roaming and visiting different regions. You know, you've had a life that has taken you to so many different countries, and you've been shaped by these experiences. Perhaps you could tell us how your notion of home has evolved as you've traveled the world, as you've created different homes for yourself. What is the relationship that you have now to home?
I think it took me a while, a long time, to realize nothing was permanent, basically. So I think when you can understand that on a, you know, conceptually, but then when you start traveling like I've been doing and having, as I was saying before, you're shaped with your relationship. The relationship that you are into is going to condition your choices, right? And so mine was everything but stable. It was a very rocky relationship. It was passionate. It was beautiful. And I don't regret any of it. But everything is inside you, right? And so that's where you got to find the stability. And it takes a while to realize that the other one is not going to really bring that, or anything material, or a house, or a car, or all of these things that we think are permanent and are going to guarantee our security. And so the constant reminder is, how can you ground yourself every day? What kind of practice can you implement in your life to find that home within, even if you left with basically nothing, you know, if everything can disappear tomorrow? So what is left then is you inside.
So the home is what constitutes you inside.
Exactly.
Is that, do you feel like that's the journey that you've been on, is to connect it to that home inside of you?
Yeah. Yeah. Every single day. And yoga helped me tremendously for that. When I started in, when was that? Like 1996, something. And, you know, just like finding myself on that yoga mat for the first time was like, oh, okay, so this is me. This is my breath. This is how I'm breathing. This is my life force, you know, and can I feel safe within? So that's feeling of safety within myself could only be generated by myself, but nothing else.
How did you get to the mat? How did you wind up on the mat in 1996?
It was very strange. It was very interesting. Like, I got invited by a friend to be on this private yoga session with her at her house. And then I said, oh, okay, why not? And I had been reading a lot about it, and I had been writing about it too. But I had never practiced. I was doing ballet dancing when I was younger. So I've always been a physical person and doing a lot of things with my body. But yoga was very new to me. And so when that first day, it was actually a night, and it was very magical. Come to her house, and it was like candlelight, and this yoga teacher arrives with this red yoga mat, and that always stayed with me, this red yoga mat, because I was actually writing a story about color and the impact mm-hmm. of color on our moods, and I was like, oh, red, that's my root chakra. So I was like, and it was a revelation, you know, like how to breathe. I wasn't even aware of my breath at all. I was like, I don't know how to breathe. And after that session, it never stopped. And that's how I could relate to that feeling that you were mentioning, you know, and that home feeling, that I'm home. I'm on this mat, I'm home, because I'm able to connect to myself, my soul, my essence, basically.
Did you have words for that before that experience? Like you said, the red mm-hmm. reminded you of the root chakra. So you had a vocabulary, you had a certain kind of exposure, I imagine, to some of those concepts.
Yeah, the essence.
As you found yourself on the yoga mat.
Yeah, the breath. Basically, the breath, you know, we say prana, life force. You're almost like naked without any external help, any source of stimulation, any feedback from anyone, nothing. It's just you. So it's painful. It's extremely painful.
What's painful?
It's painful to be on your own on this mat every single day when everything else is calling you to do something else. And the world around you is calling you to do something else, show something else, distract yourself, buy something. So then this is the eternal question, where am I? Where am I? Who am I? What am I doing? How am I feeling? How am I breathing? How do I feel my body? And it's the mm-hmm. truth, like you confront it to your truth and where it is that you are. This is why it's so difficult to meditate and sit and be with yourself. And so in my case, it was extremely healing because of my story, where I come from, my childhood story. I had a lot of, you know, trauma. Who doesn't have trauma in their life? But where this particular story shaped me, right? And then in my relationship later with my husband, there was a lot of this that showed up again in my life, because my quote trauma wasn't really processed. And so this yoga helped me to heal myself, basically, and find myself, my own home, right?
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Well, it sounds like this, when you say painful, there's this reckoning that goes on, where you know that this is a place where you're going to be able to develop that sense of home mm-hmm. within yourself. But to do that, you have to give up a lot of things that would make you feel better, distractions, mm-hmm. pastimes, things that are easier.
Beverages,
sugar, I don't know, like all the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the pain of truth, the pain of being honest with what you're showing up with and who you are at that moment every single day?
Yeah. Sitting with yourself, not easy at all. You know?
Yeah.
It's not easy at all because you wake up in the morning and, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to go work. You're going to drink something that is going to make you feel more energetic. Let's say you don't have that much energy, you're going to get coffee, you're going to go on social media. You can do so many things to distract yourself from the things that really matter and are things you could improve or things you've got to look at and you keep not looking at. This is what we call practice, you know, like when you say practice, 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 and all is coming.
So it's like the rhythm and the commitment to keep looking at who you are every day.
Yeah, and it's the hardest thing to do. But again, it doesn't have to be complicated. It can just mm-hmm. be sitting on your mat every day and breathing, you know, or just yeah, meditating and breathing. It can be a walk in the park, or it can be anything that is creative that you want to do, you know. Everything can be art. So it doesn't need to be fancy or you know, a master painting but that's what I call practice. But it needs to be daily. And then you can so write about it in a journal, write about your progress, write about how you feel, yeah, to answer the question about a home, you know, this is where you're going to feel at home, is in your heart, is in the sense that you feel at ease with your choices and at ease in your body and making healthy choices for yourself to grow.
Well, there's something that I'm interested in, is this idea of a home being within you, and it's a relationship that you work on daily to feel more and more secure and safe and trusting of your body to guide you also to the decisions that you make next.
Completely.
And at the same time, there's this idea that homes are also physically existing in different locations, and you've traveled so much. You didn't stay on that one yoga mat in Paris in 1996. Was it in Paris in 1996?
No. Paris was later. So I had started before when I was in Africa, South Africa. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you wind up there? You were in Switzerland, in Belgium. Now you're in Africa. And I know that you, since then you've, you know, New York, Hawaii, Paris, right?
That's where we met.
Right. That's where we met. But I want to take a step and just say, like, how have you known, if you're building up this relationship to your home being within you, how have you also known when it's time for you to go somewhere else physically, geographically, to search for a new destination? How have you known, and when did you first sense that you had this knowing inside of you to be able to pick up, pack your bags, and go somewhere else?
Okay, so traveling has never been a destination. Like, it wasn't to find a home or to find better or a greener field. It's how can you travel anywhere and feel at home? So you got to feel at home first before you go anywhere. So it doesn't really matter. That's why I was talking about impermanence. Like, you, even now, like, I live in San Francisco, and I could just pack and go tomorrow. You know, but I feel at home here, and I could feel at home in Paris too. So in my personal case, the reason why I traveled so much is, first of all, because I was very curious, but second of all, I was in a relationship, and this man that I was with was working in the advertising industry, and, you know, he was an extremely creative person, and he was as wild as I was, and we, you know, got married very early. But so that was great, because we were like, okay, let's try this. Let's go there. Why not? Let's do this. And then once you arrive in a new place, then it's like all your neurological pathways, you know, have to, you got to adapt. Everything is new habits, not new language, but almost new language. You learn, you know, new slang, and what are you going to do for work, and what are you going to eat, and which friends, and how a new community to find. And so I think that is what was exciting to me. Not really to say, oh, okay, so now I'm going to arrive here, I'm going to land here, it's going to be so much better, and this is going to be permanent. So it was more like, oh, we're going to try this and add this to our experience. But my home is inside. It doesn't need to be this place. Does that make any sense? Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's very unusual to approach.
I know, it's a little bit nuts. But that's how I...
I think it's amazing. It's like having that nomad, you know, it's the nomadic, I don't know, going back to the circus.
Yeah.
The circus train is going to different places, but it's still the circus train.
It's totally a circus train. I was thinking, I was talking about Peru with a friend, and it was like, okay, so why not just go there and see what it's like? And then she was like, okay, so now you're going to go to Peru or what?
Right. And everyone who knows you is like, okay, what is she up to?
And I was like, why not? But no, I'm kidding. I'm happy here. I've got things that I'm working on, and you need stability for, depending on what you're doing, you need to just stay put somewhere on the ground. But the way that I shape my life, I make it in a way that I can live anytime.
So you've shaped a life where you could leave anytime, but you've chosen to stay there because there are things there that you want to work on.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, precisely. And also, you know, there's after those fires, after Maui, it's been a lot of moving for me because I moved, I don't know how many times, but after the divorce, it's been, I think, eight moves in different places. And
when did you divorce? What year was that?
2019. So it was a lot of moving. So I think I got a little bit tired and I needed to just stay put for a little bit. And I'm already a little bit shaky. Like I need to go soon, but it's only been 3 months. Do you see what I'm saying? So this is how I function. Like after 3 months, I'm already thinking about what's next. But at the same time, I know this is just a feeling that is exciting, but I know in my home body that I need to stay here for now. Yeah.
Wow. The conversations you have with yourself and your body are very, it's like an advanced language of like interrogating yourself and interrogating your body to get answers about what you want to be doing next.
Yeah, I think, as I said, it's been a long process for me because of where I come from and this story of my childhood. So it's almost like I had no choice. And I had to befriend that body and talk to her, I said her, and interrogate her every single day to hear all the whispers. You know, when it whispers, it's already very loud, but usually because we're so distracted and we're so external and look externally that we bypass and we are in our head, not really in our bodies or hearts that much. Mm. And it takes a lot of discipline to do that. And it that's why it's so painful. You think it's easy? It's not easy for me at all to do that every day, but it's almost like I had no choice. And so now I'm starting to feel I always come back to this divorce because it was the ultimate proof of, okay, so is this work that you've been doing for so long that was the ultimate test for me? Like, oh, wow. Okay. So thank God I've been doing all those things before. And then it took another level of discipline to carry on and do better and keep growing, you know, and keep going towards what I felt was truth. For me, this is the eternal question, like, who am I? What do I want? What, how can I just live this little half second life that I'm offered the best way I can?
You talk a lot about self-love being the gateway to intuitive healing, you know, this knowing what your body needs and this idea that we have the answers inside of ourselves if we're able to practice self-love and knowing ourselves, we can find what we need at any given moment.
Mm-hmm. Practice, yep.
And this idea of like, we could do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you are a big proponent of taking the control into your own hands and fabricating what the elixirs are to provide that health that we need individually. You know, it's just, it doesn't look the same for everyone. Mm-mm. Does that resonate for you? Do you feel like that's kind of the golden thread for you, is to create that connection with yourself, the self-love and the self-knowledge, and be the master of your own healing?
Yeah.
And then allow other people to do that for themselves?
Yeah, 100%. Because I think that it's important to have guidance. It's important to, you know, search information out there, because there is information and we need the knowledge. I think instinctively we know what we need, you know, but it's difficult to believe, you know, our own instinct. And how can you know what's an instinct or the influence that you get from outside sources? And in this society, again, with social media today, this is what we do. We get up and we, if you don't have the discipline, then you're going to open, you know, switch on your iPhone and look at what's going on. This is what I mean, like, comes back to having this moment with yourself and your practice, so that when you feel that, you will know what your body needs, and then you make better choices instead of being pulled to so many directions and trying this diet and trying this pill or this form of physical activity because this celebrity or this so-and-so told you it's magic, or do you see what I'm saying? And that is why it's actually silence and simplicity are the key. You know, it's the key to knowing what it is that you really need. It's not the noise around.
What do you think? Why do you think such simple things? Why do you think that, you know, we say, talk about cultivating loving ourselves first to connect to and understand what our body needs, this sense of home. It makes like 1,000,000% sense. But why is it so hard? Why is it so hard?
Because it's the hardest thing. If we had the recipe for it, everybody would be happy. Everybody would be healthy. Nobody would be depressed.
What's wrong with us?
We are fundamentally flawed, you know, this is the eternal question, you know, why is there wars in it? Like, why are we exterminating each other? And why can't we have food safety, water safety anymore? Why, when we buy vegetables that are labeled USDA organic, you can be sure there's glyphosate on it, you know? So this is the reality of our world. And if we don't protect ourselves and go back to ourselves constantly on a daily basis, we're going to get sucked in, you know? And
I want to unwind the tape a little bit and go back to, because now you're talking about botanicals, you're talking about organic, what are we putting in our body? And, you know, you are a pioneer in talking about those things in the beauty industry and in learning about it, studying essential oils, studying massage, and then creating your own beauty brand. And that's when we met.
Actually, I don't even remember was it the salon? Was it at in Le Marais?
I think it was you had like a little spa,
A little spa. It was so cute.
On right off the Carreau du Temple.
Yeah.
Is that where it was? That became Nanashi was like it turned into like a
It was next to Raliment. Remember that restaurant, Raliment. So it was the organic restaurant, the flower shop, and then my little spa.
I probably came in because I was writing about you, and you were so sweet and lovely, and everything that was unusual for the beauty industry at the time, which was very much about big brands and advertising, and it was for me at least a huge breath of fresh air to actually interact with someone who had put so much thought and so much love and so much research into creating something that was, you know, novel at the time. The first, you know, it sounds crazy, like, but the first all organic beauty brand
it was
in France.
I did it.
You did it.
I did
you
it.
Did it.
I remember you did it. I remember everything about it. It was a fascinating journey.
How did you wind up falling into that? I read in your seasons that your grandmother made lip balm for you.
She made the
lip balm. Did she kick it off? How did you get interested in botanicals and how you could apply them to your inside and outside?
I think it's always been a kind of an obsession when I was a child. I Swiss and I, we were living in close to the, you know, country, and everything was vegetables from the garden, etc. And I've always been obsessed with scents, and I was trying to make my own mixture and understand what was in the products that we were using. And it was just a passion of mine. I cannot really explain it differently, but the trajectory then it took me, you know, I started to be a journalist, and I was mainly writing about beauty and health and personal development and those kind of themes. And then it led me to do more and more beauty. And then at the time, like, I would been asked when I was living in Africa to become a beauty editor, and I wasn't really interested into that because I felt like, you know, we were too tied to advertising and then talk about products I didn't believe in. But it was also a time where I discovered the art of massage, and I experimented massage for myself. And then I went to study massage therapy and become more hands-on. And at that point, the studies that I took there, they were adding aromatherapy and, you know, the chemistry of essential oils to our massage therapy studies. And so I dove into this very, very deeply. And then started to do massage from my house and have friends and then clients over to, you know, come for treatments. And so then I started to make my own little creams. And then I went to study at the Aveda Institute in Minneapolis. So I left there for about a year. So that was quite a stretch from South Africa to live in Minneapolis, temperature-wise. Since then, I was like, okay, this is it. Like, I'm going to really get into what it is that we make in, how do we make skincare? How do we make body care? What is in those products? And then I started to realize the word natural didn't mean anything, you know? Okay, we say natural, but it doesn't mean anything. And so then we moved to New York for another experiment. And that's where I had the idea of creating the brand, basically. That's where it started. And I had been asked to do a seminar at the Aveda Institute. And that's where it all started, because I created my own creams and I had to present them and what I use in those creams and talking about what's natural, what's not, what does that mean to be organic. And it was just the beginning at the time. So then moved to Paris, and that's where I started to think about, okay, how this is going to look like. It needs to be in a little fridge. You know, I want those products to be visible from a transparent fridge, and so that we can ask ourselves the question and maybe translate it to food, and because that's food for your skin. It's food. It's like food you eat, right? And so it was very hard to find someone or a laboratory or chemist who would believe in my concept, because at the time they were like, why do you want to put organic certified product raw ingredient in your formulation? It's completely irrelevant, never going to work, blah blah blah, until I found the right person, and he really did believe in me. And that was the founder of Sanoflor, you know, Sanoflor at the time, the founder who believed
the vision.
Of course now it's all completely changed. But we worked together and relentlessly. And then I had a designer to work on the fridge, and it was an amazing experience. And then it came out, and I remember also Cossert at the time. And I was like, do you certify any beauty products? And the answer was, well, we're working on a guideline, a charter, and a label at the moment. So you might be the first. And I was. So it was the first to be certified. I mean, I'm proud of what I made. And it was.
So you really paved the way.
I was obsessed about transparency. So all products were translated, all the formulations were translated in a vernacular language. And it evolved, and it lasted for about 11 years. And then I sold the brand 2012. Yeah.
So this is another thing that I think is interesting in your story, is that going back to the whole theme of the circus train. I'm so happy you shared that at the beginning. When is it time to change the train, to get out of that truck? How do you know that era has run its course, that the best of it is behind you, or maybe like you want to finish at a high? How do you know when it's the right time to transition out of something that works?
Well, it all comes back to the practice, you know? And so when you find you're going to ask your body, you're going to ask your heart every day, you know? And sometimes you don't need to ask. It's just going to reveal itself. And personally, the answer was, I mean, not the answer, the revelation came to me because I felt like I was done. I was done. I had something else to do. You know, it was time. I'm not sure I can explain it. Maybe if I have to really, really think about it, I had three different business partners over these 11 years. And I had moved to San Francisco in 2009. And then I could Yeah, we could do it from a distance. It was possible, but it was also not the same. And to answer your question, you know, it depends on your character too, your nature. And so, you know, my own nature is, I'm more either I do something or I don't. And it's a little bit difficult for me to be half-assed doing something. And not that I was doing it half-assed, but technically, like, I wasn't physically in Paris anymore. Although I was in touch with my business partner almost every day, it felt like I was out of, like, it was like my baby, right? It was not like I joined a company or I had made it with two people. It was just my little baby. So I was not close to this baby. It was almost like I gave it to someone to take care of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And because I wasn't physically there, I had given a little bit more shares and I had less shares. And yeah, it wasn't radical. Like, I didn't know it, you know, from one day to another, I decided, oh, that's it, I'm done. It came gradually. Because when I left Paris, I was still like, no, this is it. This is going to happen. And then as I moved through the years, I was like, okay, no, so this is not going to, I'm done. Yeah.
And how did it feel when that realization occurred?
Oh, it felt weird. It took years. And I realized that all the choices I made after that were really much conditioned. You know, you do something for so long and you think this is what you meant to do. Mm-hmm. Although I had become a yoga instructor at the time. I was doing massage, Reiki, and I was doing a lot of different things as well on the side. But I pursued that skincare thing, and I made a new brand, and then I made another brand that actually, that's another story. This is another story for later, but if you want to talk about it, but that was like, that was all I needed to do. I needed to create new skincare, new brand, new concept. And I worked a lot as an advisor for many different brands and concepts. I made personal products for a few people who were already following my brand in the past. And, you know, custom made fragrance, custom made, like.
So that was going on at the same time that you had Dumi. You were also working on this for other companies.
Yeah, I did that. But once I sold, what I mean is that I went on and on and on in that industry.
I see.
And until I, at some point, was like, nah, I'm just going to not do that anymore. And now, strangely, it came back to me more than ever the last 2 years to 3 years. So I'm doing a lot of advising now, and working on some things for myself that you're gonna know next year. Ooh. I'm gonna tell now.
Okay, so there was a point where you realized that you didn't have to be doing, you didn't have to have that connection to the brand. You could let that.
Yeah.
You could let go. That transition. And then it was like a revelation, like, well, actually, you didn't have to be in that field, in that world. And what was that like when you realized that you were maybe other iterations of Caronine, not necessarily associated with skincare? What was that phase like?
It was, I mean, there was always a little bit of me in, but it was in different people's brands. So the other people, not mine. So it was a bit weird. It was like, you realize your identity, somehow like your identity is linked to a brand, right? Because for 11 years, and talk about home, like it was like home in Paris for 11 years. I think it was the most, quote, stagnant place, you know, or permanent moment of my life. Although I was traveling a lot because I had distributors all over the place. Yeah, that felt like a very different path for me. It was a little bit unsettling in the beginning, the first phase. Yeah.
So what do you do today? What does your activity consist of today?
So today I'm, oh my God, I'm multifaceted as can be. So I do.
How many dimensions are we talking?
A lot. Sometimes I don't even know which one I'm in.
You wake up, you're like, who am I today?
Yeah, who am I today? What am I going to do? No. So there's one thing that I added to my offerings after the divorce, or before divorce, actually, way before, personal training, because that's something I love to do. You know, weight training and any athletic activity. And so I became a trainer as well. But with the background of yoga instruction and ballet dancing and the Reiki and the massage and the aromatherapy and blah, blah, blah. So today I cannot even tell you what I'm doing, but I have a lot of clients that I see every day and I coach them. So sometimes it's almost like counseling, just we talk and I have them talk and breathe. So I do a lot of breath work and yoga. Sometimes it's just training. Sometimes it's massage. But I have different clients for different things too, you know, and some really know what they want and just want personal training or just one massage or just one Reiki. But then I also work as an advisor for three different brands. I advise for product development, strategy, and marketing and all of these fun things. And on top of it, working on my own products as well. So, and after seasons, so that's been published, but then I have another book coming up that I want to publish in the next year, 2024.
2024. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you are like the full spectrum hybrid entrepreneur.
Yes. I cannot work for anyone. I mean, freelance I can, but I cannot be hired by anyone.
Well, why would you have to? Because you are your home.
Yes.
I mean, it makes perfect sense how it's like, it's all connected back to you, what you create out of your senses, out of that safety and self-knowing. It reminds me something of, you know, one of the things that happens often with the clients that I coach is that, you know, they're tuned, you know, the compass is very much set towards what is society telling me I should do, because that's how everyone's really raised.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a moment of some kind of disconnect where those messages and those dictates no longer seem to feel good. Maybe there's burnout, there's some kind of suffering that occurs, or maybe it's just a mild gnawing at you. Mm-hmm. But the hardest thing is to connect back. I mean, it's the ultimate quest is to connect back to that sense of knowing. Mm-hmm. And often the journey that occurs is that there's this sense that the security is going to be outside. Yeah. You know, the security is the job. The security is the status. It's the recognition. It's the mirroring that society reflects back at you. It's like, okay, you're mm-hmm. good. You're
yeah.
good.
And it's an illusion.
You're good.
Yeah.
And the ultimate cherry on the cake of the process as we kind of finalize where people have arrived at is when there's that sense of, I am the one who determines my sovereignty and my safety mm-hmm. and my sense
yeah.
of home.
It's the hardest thing to do.
And it's the hardest thing to do. And sometimes it could be very, you know, it could be ephemeral. Like there could be a glimpse of it. And then it's a real, as you say, like a practice that you need to do over and over and over, because it is an mm-hmm. illusion that there's that other thing that we need to grasp onto that is going to give us the sense yeah. of self, the sense of security.
Yep.
And so I can imagine that for you, this is what you do. This is your absolute, like, your mm-hmm. raison d'être to continue to refine that,
yes,
right?
That's exactly it.
So how would you work for someone else?
Exactly. No, can't. Impossible. I can work with someone else. I can work with many people. I love this. I love collaboration. I love doing things with people. And I'm not claiming that I'm an individualistic, you know, like I roll from just for me, myself and I at all. But I think the more I get to know myself, the better person I can be for others, right? Because I can be more grounded. I can offer things from a place of, you know, feel clear with my intentions, mm-hmm. if you are going to advise anyone to do anything or work with someone from the ground up to create something, you need to be really a clear vessel, you know, a clear channel. Yeah.
Mm. And so what do you do, especially what's going on right now in the world? How do you keep your channels clear. When the world is in turmoil, like, what is your recipe, so to speak?
My yoga mat. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be fancy. It doesn't need to be a complicated asana practice with like fancy ass breathwork practice and music and turbans and all that shit. Like, it just needs to be you and your mat, period. Mm-hmm. And so right now, you know, I'm in the room and I have my yoga mat on the floor. And I have a few artifacts, like transitional objects that I love, my crystals, and the end, me. And it's painful every day, but then you find some bliss out of it. Mm-hmm. And again, like, go where this feels good to you and try to learn fundamentals of meditation and yoga and then make your own. It's the same as I'm saying in my book. It's like, I'm giving some guidance, some fundamentals, and then you do your own. You try and see how it feels for you, because what feels good to me doesn't necessarily feel good to you or anyone else. And on top of it, yeah, like, what do I know? You know, I know I have some experience, I've learned a few things, but I don't claim to know anything.
Right. So it's about allowing other people to be the decision makers.
Yes.
To have the... Mm-hmm. To have that knowing. Yeah. I mean, we keep coming back to that, to know what feels good for yourself. You're not the guru. You're not the one that's going to dictate.
No, that's the rules. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. First of all, to think you are one, and then to go to any guru whatsoever. But, you know, like breathing, for example, you have so many different type of breath work, and you could just sit on your mat and practice one, and then you'll find that you're, I don't know, maybe you start Nadi Shodhana, alternate nostril breathing, or you practice a breath work to specifically help you with your nervous system and to calm down that your nervous system with inhale through your nose, exhale through your mouth, your O-shaped mouth, and just start with that and see how it feels. And then from there, you can invent some practices. That there's a lot of practices that I totally invented for myself in that work.
Well, this has been phenomenal and fascinating. I want to know, as we kind of come to a little bit of our denouement, of our closing down of this conversation, what has been a revelation about who you're becoming more of?
Well, you know, I think I had the answer a few days ago when I went to have coffee with a friend I hadn't seen in 4 years, actually. And I just said to him, it's interesting, like, it feels like it was yesterday. Like we were, you know, chatting together and nothing changed and you didn't change and you're the same. You're even wearing the similar clothes. It was, and he said, yeah. And I think what I see is that you really becoming more and more you. And you know, when it felt like, and we didn't talk more about this, but then I reflected on it. I was like, what does that really mean? Like, I'm really me. That's interesting, you know? So, but I think it's true. This is the answer to your question. Like, I feel like I'm making the choices that it's just the choices that I need to make. And they're not conditioned by any diktats or anyone else in my life who's forcing me to do anything. I don't want to say I am lucky, but I built this luck on my own. Like I worked really hard to get to this place of freedom, you know, in my movement, in my action, my creation, my work. And it doesn't, I don't mean it's easy at all, but it's hard work, you know, but it's a beautiful place to be in, because to me, this is the freedom, although it's illusory, because you still live in a society where you got to conform to a lot of things, you know.
I love what you just said about having you built
yes.
that luck.
Yes.
It's a practice. It's something, you know, it didn't fall from the sky. You've worked on it. You've had your trials and tribulations.
Yes, it's been an adventure. It's been rocky and it's been difficult, but also beautiful. And, you know, I think in the shadow, in the darkness, we got to embrace this. Like, we got to embrace the light and shadow, and they can't exist, you know, one without the other. unfortunately.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's making peace with that, I think, is the thing, the practice. It's that, the practice.
Well, thank you so much.
Of course, my dear.
For this conversation.
It was awesome. After all these years. Oh my God. It was 20.
Almost 20 years ago. Crazy. Well, it was fantastic to catch up, and we should do this more often. So,
see you soon, my dear. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I am so appreciative of having your time and your attention, and would love to hear anything you have to say, any feedback, any questions, any requests. You can leave me a voice message if you go to speakpipe.com/onbecoming. That's speakpipe, speakpipe.com/onbecoming. I promise to get back to you. If this podcast has touched you, inspired you, transformed you in any way, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast listening platform.